Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the firing today of Bill O'Reilly, Fox News' top-rated anchor, which was announced in a letter to staff by Rupert Murdoch and his sons James and Lachlan. Dan Cassino, a professor of political science at Fairleigh Dickinson University and author of Fox News and American Politics, How One Channel Shapes American Politics and Society, joins us to discuss the accumulating accusations of sexual harassment that continue to emerge even after the New York Times revealed settlements with five women who were paid a total of $13 million. This prompted at least 60 advertisers to boycott O'Reilly and Fox, and with the O'Reilly scandal on top of the Ailes scandal, apparently the message finally reached Rupert Murdoch that serial sexual harassment is not only bad, it's bad for business. Then we'll look into the snap election called for June the 8th by Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May in the hope that she can increase her majority to get through the next 2 years of the Brexit transition out of the EU. The author of Brexit, Why Britain Voted to Leave the European Union, Harold Clark, a professor of political and policy studies at the University of Texas, joins us. He is the co-investigator of the British election study and a visiting professor at the University of Manchester, and we will discuss the likelihood that the UK's opposition Labour Party will suffer even greater losses than they did in the last election. Then finally, we'll speak with Christopher Arndt, who serves on the board of the Natural Resources Defence Council and is the author of a new book, The Right's Road to Serfdom: The Danger of Conservatism Unbound, from Hayek to Trump. He joins us to discuss the freedom fraud foisted on America by the Koch brothers and the authoritarian strongman conservatism that drives the American right today, which runs counter to the principles of liberty that conservatives and libertarians espouse. And joining us now is Dan Cassino, a professor of political science at Fairleigh Dickinson University, who also serves as director of experimental research for the university's independent research group, Public Mind. His latest book is Fox News and American Politics: How One Channel Shapes American Politics and Society. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dan Cassino.
It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
And Bill O'Reilly is finished at Fox News. It's quite a surprise, although not in terms of the news cycle, but the idea that the top-rated performer, or anchor, I guess, to be a little more fair, who's been there since the very beginning of Fox News, who's beats everybody else in the ratings, is gone, and not without some problems. But why do you think it was such a painfully slow learning process for the Murdochs, particularly after Roger Ailes and his disgraceful behavior? So what's the problem there with them? I mean, it seems that they've really had a hard time learning. The obvious thing is that not only is sexual harassment bad, it's also bad for business.
Well, right. And it wasn't until very recently that it became clear that it was actually going to hurt the bottom line. So Bill O'Reilly, while he was engaging in serial sexual harassment, was a problem in that they were having to pay settlements, but it wasn't actually a financial problem for them because the amount of revenue he was bringing in more than offset whatever problems, whatever settlements they were having to pay off. This became a real problem when the advertiser boycott took hold, and we saw this happen previously several years ago to Glenn Beck, where Glenn Beck had said things that were offensive, even though he had very, very high ratings. Once advertisers pulled all their ads, they really had no choice but to cancel him. With Glenn Beck, they actually kept him on the air for 2 months with no national advertisers. It was pretty bad at the end. It was all people trying to sell you survivalist kits or try and exchange your worthless American money for valuable gold. And eventually, they had no choice but to take him off the air. And the same thing happened here with Bill O'Reilly. The other issue here is actually one of civil liability for Fox News. Basically, the fact that it's now become clear that they have so many settled sexual harassment allegations opens them up legally to a lot of trouble. Essentially, if one manager or one person at a company is engaging in sexual harassment and the company is doing what they're supposed to be doing about it, the company isn't at fault. However, it can be shown that the company isn't doing anything about it, the company knows it's going on and isn't stopping it, then the company is not only liable, it's actually liable for punitive damages. And those punitive damages, knowing how many other victims potentially are out there, if you're Lachlan and James, the new managers at Fox News, you don't want to open yourself up to that kind of liability.
Well, my understanding is that the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, who was fired by Trump, was looking into a number of things, including the prosecution of the bag man for Turkish dictator Erdogan, who was dealing with the Iranians, money laundering, and sanction busting for them. He's apparently, they're trying to get him off, and Preet Bharara was in the way. But they also, the Trump people also, I think, were working on Murdoch's behalf, weren't they? Because Preet Bharara was looking into the liability that Fox has for not informing its shareholders about these secret payments.
Well, right. So this is an issue of fiduciary responsibility for Fox, given that a lot of these were Fox paying on behalf of Roger Ailes and on behalf of Bill O'Reilly. Fox should have disclosed that. Now, Fox claimed that these were personnel matters and therefore were not subject to disclosure, that they weren't actually legal settlements. And you could make the claim that it wasn't Fox itself being sued, but the individuals. So that would have been a interesting case legally. But, you know, the issue here really is Bill O'Reilly and the role, the special role Bill O'Reilly himself had played. We have to remember, Bill O'Reilly had been allied with Roger Ailes, working with him since before Fox News existed, back in the 90s on syndicated shows like Inside Edition. And so Bill O'Reilly was one of the last vestiges of that original group of Roger Ailes loyalists. And with his departure, we're left basically with just Sean Hannity from that original lineup. And it really seems like James and Lachlan are making good on their promise to reconfigure Fox. And we've seen voices outside of that core group at Fox expressing hope that, oh, this means we're going to be free to be a real news organization. I mean, Shep Smith has been particularly open about this, saying, you know, the new management came in and said, we can criticize the president, we can do whatever we need to do to be a serious news organization. Now, whether being a serious news organization translates into ratings, well, we'll see. But there's also very little indication that Bill O'Reilly is responsible for all the ratings he got. Bill O'Reilly has a personal following. You can tell he has, what, three bestsellers on the bestseller list right now. But relative to the other shows on Fox News, he doesn't get that big of a ratings bump over what you see at the hour before him or the hour after him. Most Fox News viewers are Fox News viewers rather than being fans of one show in particular, as you'd find in other networks. So financially, it may make sense for them to get rid of him. And while whoever replaces him will certainly get lower ratings, at least initially, than Bill O'Reilly did, you know, if they're paying him one-third of what they were paying O'Reilly, and O'Reilly had just renegotiated his contract after Roger Ailes had exited, then it could still be financially beneficial for Fox News. And as long as they're making money, no one's going to ask too many questions.
And again, I'm speaking with Dan Cassino, who's a professor of political science at Fairleigh Dickinson University, who also serves as director of the experimental research for the university's independent research group, Public Mind. His latest book is Fox News and American Politics, How One Channel Shapes American Politics and Society. So what is it about this culture of misogyny and sexual harassment and these serial sexual harassers, Roger Ailes in charge of Fox News and Bill O'Reilly, their biggest star? Now, obviously, Sean Hannity wasn't a part of that club, but is there any sort of psychological explanation for it in terms of these kind of junkyard dog, yapping, hard right-wing sort of faux populist politics? I mean,
I'm not sure it's a general rule that people who are, you know, powerful men on the right are going to engage in sexual harassment. However, this particular culture within Fox News, remember, Roger Ailes had gotten his start in the 1960s when the sort of thing we call sexual harassment was normal office behavior. And he didn't seem to adapt. And moreover, he'd been successful enough, he didn't necessarily see any reason he had to change his behavior. And so what was acceptable at the top with Roger Ailes was certainly acceptable down the line. And that's the sort of toxic culture that leads to endemic sexual harassment in an organization like Fox News. I think there's also a rejection of the idea that you need to have diversity in the boardroom and at high levels of decision-making. If you'd had more women at higher levels of decision-making, it's likely someone would have sounded the alarm earlier on this. And so maybe the reason you get organizations that are more right-wing being more prone to this sort of scandal is because they're less diverse at the top. And so there's no one to come in and say, from another perspective, hey, this isn't okay. And we saw on Fox News, the second actually a woman was elevated up to those top ranks, having a primetime show, Roger Ailes came down pretty quickly after Megyn Kelly was in there, because we've heard about the meetings. You know, Roger Ailes gathers the troops, all the primetime hosts, says, all right, here's the strategy, here's what we're going to say to defend these sexual harassment allegations. And Megyn Kelly said, nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be any part in this. I'm not going to defend you. Once a woman gets in those high ranks, it's much harder to cover up and hide this behavior. So organizations that have women at those high ranks aren't going to have as many problems.
Right, but Megyn Kelly left Fox. She obviously was uncomfortable there.
Well, she was uncomfortable even after Roger Ailes was ousted. We can understand now she was actually still saying, well, Bill O'Reilly was part of this too. There was this old boys club at Fox News. And, you know, getting rid of one member, that didn't clear out that entire culture. Moreover, if you're Megyn Kelly, she really thinks she has a career well outside of Fox News. She wants a career much more like Katie Couric than one like Gretchen Carlson.
So Rupert Murdoch himself, this must have been painful for him. I mean, it's pretty amazing that he didn't notice all this stuff going on in his company, but apparently the Suns did, and the Suns are trying to reorient Fox into, you know, at least trying to find a way to bring the millennial generation in, which seems like a bit of a chimera, but they're trying, you know. So do you think, though, that there's just this hardcore of people that, and it's an old, let's call it the angry old white demographic. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
So, Fox News, you know, I think this is a misconception people have about Fox News, that, oh, it's old white guys that watch it. And it's just not the case. Fox News actually has a pretty diverse demographic reach if we look at all the day parts from morning until evening. And a lot of that's because in a lot of public places, Fox News is just the channel that's left on. So you get a lot of incidental viewing. And because of that, Fox News audience isn't even majority conservative. About 25% of liberals in America report they watch Fox News at least once a month. So it's a relatively diverse audience for most of the day. The evening viewers watching O'Reilly and Hannity tend to be more conservative, tend to be older, tend to be whiter. But there is some diversity in the audience. The big problem they've had is that every attempt they've made to try and bring in a younger audience has failed. And Megyn Kelly was their big gamble to try and get a younger audience. They brought Megyn Kelly in, and her audience actually wound up having an older median age than Bill O'Reilly's audience. Her median audience was 70, or median viewer was 71 years old, as opposed to O'Reilly, who's right around 68 for his median age of audience. So they haven't figured out how to reach younger viewers. In their defense, no news channel has figured out how to reach younger viewers. The most successful has been CNN, who is reaching younger viewers by not showing news, instead doing documentaries and Anthony Bourdain. So I'm not sure that's really a solution either. So this is not a problem just Fox News has. This is a problem everyone has. Moreover, if I'm Rupert Murdoch, I'm not sure this is a problem at all. Yeah, I've got old viewership, but so does CBS. They're the most successful channel on television. So the mere fact your audience is old doesn't mean they don't have disposable income, doesn't mean advertisers don't value them. So you have to ask, is it worth alienating that older, loyal audience in order to try and get a younger audience that, you know, might be just getting all the news from Snapchat and Instagram instead?
So what then do you think happened with Rupert Murdoch? Because my understanding was that he's very loyal to O'Reilly and recognized, and the letter that he and the Sun sent out to the staff today, you know, had the usual sort of homilies about how great and how successful O'Reilly was. But my understanding is that the thing that really stuck in Murdoch's craw was the idea that he didn't want to give the New York Times, which he hates and is competing with, that's why he bought the Wall Street Journal. He didn't want to give them credit for being the ones that drove O'Reilly out by revealing these $13 million in payments to five women.
Well, certainly that's part of Rupert Murdoch's thinking. But we also understand Rupert Murdoch with Fox News has never been much of a hands-on manager. You know, from Ailes' description, Murdoch's management came down to how much money did you make this quarter? What's your viewership like? And as long as Ailes was making money and, you know, getting enough viewers, Murdoch didn't have any more questions. He left it up to Ailes to run this place however he wants. And it seems like Murdoch is having to take a little more of a hand in running things since Ailes is gone. And surely this does have to stick in Murdoch's craw that the New York Times gets this scoop and gets this coup, and O'Reilly's forced out partially because of their reporting. But this is also a financial decision, a business decision. I mean, even if you could just keep on, if all you're doing is going to keep on paying these settlements till the end of time, I have to imagine that James and Lachlan and Rupert Murdoch would all be fine paying out an extra $10 million a year and just basically calling that part of his compensation package. The issue really is about losing advertisers, even though they weren't directly losing advertisers because the advertisers were just moving their ads to other parts of the day. They were having to sell ads and run fewer ads during that hour, which is normally very profitable, and they were exposing themselves to potentially enormous civil liability. I mean, the problem comes, you can pay $10 million in a lawsuit every year for Bill O'Reilly. The problem comes when you have a $500 million punitive suit because you haven't handled sexual harassment problems. And there's no way they're going to be willing to pay that out. And that's really what they're trying to get ahead of here.
So it wasn't as if Fox was starting, the advertisers, about, what, 60, have pulled their advertising from O'Reilly. I thought that they were also starting to pull them from Fox itself.
We do have, so there's two groups. So there are advertisers that have pulled from Fox itself, saying we're not going to run ads on Fox News. But that's a much smaller group than the, and it doesn't include nearly as many large national accounts as those that have just pulled from O'Reilly. They said we, you know, and so most of the advertisers that have pulled their ads have just said, look, you know, they've already bought the ads are already paid for. They're just shifting the ads. So, okay, instead of doing it during O'Reilly, put that ad on during Hannity. And there just weren't enough ads that were people were still okay with running during O'Reilly to even fill up the ad room they had on O'Reilly. For the past couple weeks, O'Reilly's ads have been down to 12 or 11 minutes an hour, where normally you'd expect it to be somewhere between 18 and 22 minutes. So they've lost a lot of revenue there. Now, there was a strategy for a while, well, we'll just wait this out. Eventually, the advertisers will come back. But it didn't look like that was happening. And they're also getting pushback from major ad buyers. We have to remember, upfronts are coming pretty soon. And so the ad rates for Fox News as a whole might wind up dropping if we have this advertiser boycott. It's one thing if people say, oh, we're going to shift our ads around. Once upfronts come and all the TV advertisers are selling their or deciding where they're going to place their ads, it's a real problem if people are saying, well, let's just avoid Fox for this quarter. And that would be a major hit to their revenue. And they just weren't going to let that happen.
Well, I guess, you know, this is a I guess to some extent this is the other side of what happened with Dan Rather. You know, there were a lot of right-wingers wanted to get rid of him, and they were thrilled when CBS dropped him. And a lot of liberals and left-wingers have really been driven crazy by O'Reilly, and they're thrilled that he's gone. But none of that begins to deal with the real issue here is what Fox has done to American journalism. And I used to spend a lot of time in the Soviet Union and met a lot of journalists there with TASS and Pravda, and most of them were KGB guys. But it's the ones that were journalists, you felt sorry for them because they literally had to write the party line. And that's what Fox does. It's the Pravda of the Republican Party. It goes against the whole idea of American freedom that, you know, that the press is not the PR operation of the government. That happens in totalitarian societies, not in a free society like America. And my sense is that Fox has really done terrible damage to that idea of, you know, the fourth estate being separate from the government. They basically are the mouthpiece of the Trump administration.
Well, you know, I think I push back on that on two points. The first is that I'm not sure that this idea of a nonpartisan press is really that old. I mean, in America, the press was insanely partisan, really up until the start of the Cold War, when we had this kind of enforced neutrality on partisan issues from the press and this rise of a, you know, professional class of journalists. But that's really not, that's an invention of the early to mid-20th century. Prior to that, if we go back to the founding, the newspapers were all partisan and explicitly partisan. I'd say in every way, Fox News is much more of a throwback to the era of Jefferson and Jackson than it is, you know, a new model. I think what Fox News, the big contribution Fox News has made, is said, hey, look, here is a way to make money off of journalism. And that's something no one else has been able to do in the quantity that Fox News has done in the 21st century. They figured a way to monetize journalism. The problem is that the way of monetizing journalism is to make it less journalistic. And as you say, they're really parroting a mouthpiece. In some cases, I would say they're not the mouthpiece of the Republican Party. They are doing a better job than the Republican Party is doing. There's a reason that, you know, George W. Bush hired Tony Snow to be his spokesman, because Fox News, Tony Snow and Fox News, did a better job than George Bush was with putting out his own message. And I think that's partially because Roger Ailes was such a genius at messaging. But the problem, I think, for American journalism is that Fox News showed the way to make a profit is to be less journalistically rigorous. And all the news organizations we've seen that have become profitable since then, places like BuzzFeed, that have figured out, the news content itself doesn't matter. If that's the only way journalism can be profitable, and if we expect that journalism has to be profitable, then we've got a real problem on our hands going forward.
Well, Dan Cozzino, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure as always, Ian.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Dan Cozzino. He's a professor of political science at Fairleigh Dickinson University, who also serves as director of experimental research for the university's independent research group, Public Mind. His latest book is Fox News and American Politics, How One Channel Shapes American Politics and Society. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the snap election called for June 8th by Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May.